We often talk about big sweeping rights, but sometimes, the most important ones are those that protect our most fundamental needs, like having a safe place to live, free from discrimination. The Fair Housing Act is absolutely key here.
Definitely.
And to really understand its power, we're going to deep dive into a really fascinating case, Hunt v. Inco Properties. This ruling by the 11th Circuit back in 2016 isn't just legal jargon. It's a real-world example of how the law steps in to protect vulnerable people.
Well, exactly. And what makes Hunt v. Aimto so important is how it highlights that the Fair Housing Act's protections extend very clearly to people with disabilities. And it tackles a really tricky area when a landlord's actions might be based on assumptions and, well, stereotypes rather than actual facts. It's quite remarkable how a situation that started with some concerning words ended up becoming a landmark legal case, clarifying crucial aspects of disability discrimination in housing.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics then. Our deep dive today centers on Diane Hunt and her son, Carl. They had called an Aimco apartment complex in Florida home since 2006. Now, it's really important to understand that Carl has Down syndrome, and developmentally, he functions at about the level of a 7-year-old.
Right.
They'd been living there for a good 6 years without issue when things suddenly took a very unexpected turn, all stemming from some statements Carl made.
Yes, and the content of these statements is critical. The case details how Carl repeated lines he'd heard from a Japanese anime show, things like, "I will sacrifice you," that he wanted to trap all residents, and even that he would set the property on fire.
Wow.
Now, understandably, Aimco staff were alarmed and interpreted these as genuine threats. But here's the crucial piece of context that Diane tried to explain. These weren't his own intentions or ideas. He was simply repeating lines from a TV show due to his disability.
Right. And this is the point where you see how things went wrong. Instead of trying to understand why Carl might be saying these things or, assessing if there was any real danger, Aimco's response was immediate and, as the court later determined, deeply flawed. They sent Diane a notice that they wouldn't be renewing their lease. And this was after Diane had informed them about Carl's Down syndrome, but it didn't stop there. They also got the police involved, and the police then restricted Carl's access to the community clubhouse and even the apartment office.
Yeah, what's really striking is that Aimco didn't seem to make any effort to understand the situation or communicate effectively with Diane. She even took the initiative to ask if Aimco could help her arrange daycare for Carl, hoping that might prevent any future misunderstandings or perceived problems.
That sounds like a very reasonable, a proactive step from a parent.
Totally reasonable. Yet, according to the case, Aimco just ignored her request, completely ignored it.
You can only imagine what this was like for Diane and Carl. Carl, functioning as a young child, suddenly had police involved and couldn't go to the places he usually did. That must have been incredibly scary and confusing for him.
Oh, absolutely.
Not surprisingly, he started experiencing anxiety. And Diane was suddenly facing eviction, the immense stress of that, plus the financial burden of finding a new place to live unexpectedly. It really brings home the human impact of what could otherwise seem like just, well, a legal argument.
Absolutely. And the 11th Circuit really zeroed in on Aimco's fundamental mistake. They didn't try to objectively assess whether Carl's behavior posed any actual danger to other residents or the property.
Right.
Instead, their actions appeared to be driven by assumptions and possibly even ingrained stereotypes about individuals with disabilities. This kind of discriminatory thinking is precisely what the Fair Housing Act is designed to prevent.
Exactly.
So, a key insight here is that landlords can't just assume a disabled person poses a risk. They need to do their homework and prove it with actual evidence.
So this all led to Diane Hunt bringing legal claims against Aimco under the Fair Housing Act. There were three main arguments. First, that Aimco unlawfully denied them housing under Section 3604F1. Essentially, they argued that the non-renewal of their lease was because of Carl's disability and the stereotypes associated with it.
Makes sense.
Think of it like this. You can't refuse someone a home just because they use a wheelchair. And similarly, you can't refuse someone a home based on unfounded fears about their disability.
The second claim was about discriminatory terms and conditions under Section 3604(2). This focused on how Aimco treated Carl differently due to his disability, specifically by restricting his access to the clubhouse and office. The argument was that this unequal treatment was discriminatory. Landlords simply can't treat disabled tenants differently in the services or facilities they offer without a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason.
And the third claim was failure to accommodate under Section 3604. This centered on Diane's request for help with daycare as a potential solution to Aimco's concerns. The Hunts argued that AIMCO had a legal duty to consider this as a reasonable accommodation for Carl's disability, and their refusal to even engage with the idea was a violation.
Right.
Now, it's important to remember that the initial district court actually dismissed this case.
Yes. The district court essentially said that the Hunts' allegations didn't rise to the level of a violation under the FHA. But that wasn't the end of the road. The appellate court, the 11th Circuit, took a different view, and their decision is really what we're focusing on today.
Okay.
They disagreed with the lower court and brought the Hunts lawsuit back to life. So the story doesn't end there. Let's turn to the 11th Circuit and see why they disagreed.
Let's break down the 11th Circuit's analysis, because this is where the really significant legal interpretations come in.
Yeah.
Regarding the unlawful denial of housing claim, the court was very clear. They said that AIMCO's decision not to renew the lease appeared to be based on Carl's disability, not on any objective evidence of actual risk.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a really powerful statement. Housing providers can't act on stereotypes about disabilities.
Mm.
That really cuts to the heart of the issue.
It does. It underscores the fundamental purpose of the FHA to stop housing decisions from being tainted by prejudice and, well, baseless fears about people with disabilities. Then, looking at the discriminatory terms claim, the 11th Circuit again sided with the Hunts.
Okay.
They found that using law enforcement to essentially intimidate Carl and prevent him from using common areas was unequal treatment directly linked to his disability. And they had another very strong line. Landlords can't use law enforcement as a proxy for discrimination.
Wow, that's potent.
It highlights that you can't use the authority of law enforcement to achieve a discriminatory outcome.
And finally, on the failure to accommodate claim, the appellate court found that Diane's attempts to explain Carl's behavior and her suggestion of daycare were enough to constitute a request for a reasonable accommodation.
Right.
The court emphasized that the FHA requires landlords to participate in what's called an interactive process, essentially a good faith dialogue to explore potential accommodations. AIMCO's complete refusal to even consider the daycare proposal was deemed a violation of this requirement.
Yeah, imagine Diane's frustration. She was trying to be proactive, offering a solution, and was completely ignored.
Exactly.
This idea of the interactive process is absolutely key to understanding what landlords are obligated to do under the FHA. They can't just dismiss an accommodation request. They have to engage, ask questions, get more information, and see if a reasonable adjustment can address the situation.
So they have to talk about it.
They have to talk about it. The court also brought in the direct threat standard in their analysis, which is what happens when a landlord brings up safety concerns related to a tenant's disability. Now, if a landlord does have genuine safety concerns about a tenant's disability, the law provides a specific way they need to assess that risk. It's called the direct threat standard, and it's a really important concept here.
Right. So can you explain exactly what the direct threat standard is and how the court applied it in this case?
Certainly. The direct threat standard requires a very specific and individualized assessment of any potential safety risk. The court laid out three main things that a landlord has to evaluate. First, the nature and how long the risk might last. Second, how likely it is that harm will actually occur. And third, if there are any reasonable accommodations that could lessen or eliminate the risk.
Okay, so a proper assessment.
A proper individualized assessment. What the 11th Circuit found was that AIMCO didn't do any of this in Carl's case. They acted based on assumptions and fears without any objective analysis of whether he truly posed a significant and immediate threat.
Hmm. So the core insight here is that landlords can't just assume a disabled person poses a risk. They need to do their homework and prove it with actual evidence based on these specific factors. So when we look at Hunt v. AIMCO as a whole, what are the big takeaways, especially for, say, law students listening, studying housing law?
Well, there are several really important points. First, this case reinforces the legal tests used in FHA cases. Generally, someone making a claim needs to show they have a disability or are associated with someone who does, that they asked for a reasonable accommodation, if that's the issue, that the accommodation was necessary for them to have an equal opportunity to live in the housing, and crucially, that the landlord refused to provide it.
Okay.
Second, the ruling really emphasizes how closely courts will look at whether landlords actually conduct an individualized assessment of risk when concerns related to a disability come up, rather than just relying on their own assumptions or stereotypes.
And it sounds like this decision has some pretty broad implications beyond just this specific situation, right?
Absolutely. Hunt v. AIMCO sends a very clear message to landlords that they have to engage meaningfully with tenants who request accommodations related to a disability. It highlights the crucial role of the Fair Housing Act in actively fighting against disability-based stereotypes in housing.
Yeah.
As the court essentially said, you can't just treat a disability as an inherent threat without having real evidence. And for tenants, as you pointed out earlier, this case really does offer a kind of toolkit for challenging bias.
The toolkit, I like that.
It shows them that there are legal avenues to pursue when they face discriminatory housing practices, that they have the right to ask for accommodations, and that landlords have a responsibility to take those requests seriously.
So beyond this specific case, how does this ruling really shift the landscape for landlords in how they interact with tenants who have disabilities? It really puts the onus on them to be proactive and informed, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. They can't plead ignorance or rely on gut feelings anymore. They need processes in place.
So just to quickly recap, the 11th Circuit's decision to bring the Hunt claims back to court was a really significant moment. It really underscored that when disability is involved in housing, simply making assumptions isn't acceptable. Proactive communication and a rejection of stereotypes aren't just good practice, they're legal obligations.
Exactly. It goes beyond just stating the law and gives us a very concrete example of how courts will scrutinize a landlord's actions when disability plays a role in housing decisions.
This case really makes you think. Next time you encounter a situation involving tenant behavior and a potential eviction, consider this. Was there a real, evidence-based assessment of risk and a genuine effort to explore reasonable accommodations? Or were underlying stereotypes about disability at play?
A crucial distinction.
It's a really important question to keep in mind as we try to balance safety with the fundamental right to non-discriminatory housing.
Indeed. And as we continue to grapple with these important issues, the lessons we learn from Hunt v. AAMCO will no doubt continue to shape how we understand and enforce fair housing laws in the future.